Om Shanti. Can we give a grand, heartfelt welcome to Jenti Ben and Gayatri Ben? This evening's topic is the revelation of golden secrets, which both of them have many. And so we're really looking forward to this. And we have a little surprise for you, Jenti Ben. It's because it's about secrets. So Gayatri really pulled one for you.
Om Shanti.
I think this is the first time I'm interviewing Sister Jenti. Sister Jenti, are you nervous?
I think I've got too many gray hairs to be nervous.
All right, just in case the little black that's left and you're a little bit nervous, don't worry, Auntie's sitting here, so she won't let me say anything.
She'll keep you on track.
Sister Jenti, I've known since I was born spiritually. Actually, she's the one who gave me spiritual birth, so she's actually my spiritual mother. And I have more gray hairs than her, so... Sister Jayanti came to Baba. For those of you, I wanted to say this because I know some of the brothers and sisters here are new and may not know this about Sister Jayanti. And since it is to reveal secrets, I thought of starting here. Sister Jayanti came to Baba when she was very young, and she's actually has a blood connection to Brahma Baba. How many of you knew that? Oh, quite a few, but many didn't. Sister Jayanti is Baba's very, very lovely daughter. And we can see from the way he looks at her and the way he treats her and, you know, the way he speaks to her. And if she's not around, he looks for her. So she's very, very special to Baba, to Bab Dada. We all know she's very beautiful, right? And so I'm supposed to introduce her. So her spiritual beauty radiates through her features. So her entire face is beautiful, not because of the physical construct, but because of the spiritual beauty that radiates.
I'm wondering why...
Sister Jayanti, you cannot talk until I tell you, ask you the question. Sister Jayanti is brilliant. And of course, we all know the brilliance radiates from her.
In Hindi, they say that if you butter up somebody, you're trying to go somewhere.
And this is where I'm trying to go. And Sister Jayanti is very benevolent. How does she show her benevolence? Sister Jayanti, what were you doing just before you came here?
Emails.
Emails. Sister Jayanti brings benefit to every single person who shows up in her inbox. She has to answer that email. And then when you ask, well, why do you have to answer every single email? She spends hours answering each one of us who sends her an email. She says, because there's a person there at the other end of that email waiting for a response. So when I was thinking of her benevolence, I thought that each one of us is like the Chatrak bird, just waiting for that response to come. And no matter what she says, we just swallow it, right? And we become very content.
It's not quite like that.
Well, for tonight, it's like that, right? So, Sister Jayanti, you surrendered to Baba, I think, at a very young age. What's the secret of your surrender?
I fell in love with God. Mm-hmm. It was firstly just curiosity, because I'd been seeing the Brahma Kumaris in my life and Muralis popping through the letterbox since I was 8 years old. But it was, and even meeting Brahma Baba, but just as a wonderful human being, and no further awareness than that. And then it was in March 1968, I was in Pune at my grandmother's home, and I was beginning to feel that I need to give some food to my intellect. And I then went knocking on Daddy Janki's door, April, the first week of April. And the things that Daddy said were so powerful and so beautiful that it inspired me to take Gyan and study. And within a few days, I was then listening to Murali's in the morning and continuing with my course in the afternoon. And the beauty of the knowledge was very, very powerful. But then it was actually this experience of yoga and Amrit Vela. And my first Amrit Velas were in a very beautiful place, a hill station called Mahabaleshwar. And we'd gone there to be with Daddy Prakashmani, Daddy Kumarka. And she'd be conducting Amrit Vela, she'd be reading the Murali. And it was just very, very beautiful. And through that experience, I began to realize that this is the life that I want. And it truly was that feeling that I found God and nothing else matters. And this is all that I want in my life. And when I told my mother, she had a dozen different things that she put to me from the other side. How was I going to manage in India? Because there were no centers outside Bharat. How was I going to do this? How was I going to do that? Many, many questions. And none of them mattered. It just felt as if, you know, I'd be able to deal with whatever was going to come in my way. And I was somewhere up here. I was flying. And I didn't think that any of those practical details had any relevance. And so really it was that experience of just being in love with God. And it's true. The other day we were reading a blessing from Baba. And Baba said, when you're lost in love, there are no obstacles. And it wasn't any effort that I made at that time. It was just Baba pulling me with a lot of love. And there were no obstacles. You just sailed through everything. And it was a very beautiful experience. And today, I have to pay attention to experience that stage. But at that time, it was Baba's gift that that experience was just happening. And it wasn't one day, 2 day, it was like for a whole stretch of time. And it gave me the motivation and capacity to be able to deal with whatever other people were saying, whatever questions were coming my way. And so it was just very powerful.
What would you say is the seed that sustained that love, that commitment, Baba? What was the seed that sustained your love? Because obviously there were no breaks in the many, many years with Baba.
I think it was, I would remember Baba's face, Sakar Baba's face. I would remember Avyakt Baba's Srishti. And I would remember the very, very beautiful blessings that Baba has continually been giving me. And so as I received all those blessings and all that love, I just had to emerge that, and it would keep me on track.
I remembered one of the blessings, a little bit of the blessing that Baba had given you, and I was sitting there, and he said to you, when the hearts are close, what does distance matter?
Mm-hmm.
So it is true. It's a lot of love that keeps you so strong and stable. I know throughout your, the initial years of your life and quite into the development of your spiritual life, Rajni Ben, who's your mother, your Lokik mother, played a very important role. And we keep hearing about it from Daddy Janki, and I myself met her, and many of us in this room met her, so we know Rajni Ben very well. And so we know the secret of your relationship with her. But what is the secret of your relationship with Murali Dada? Murali Dada is her father.
I was very, very struck when, in 1982, I suddenly received a phone call. I was in Baba's house, and it was the month of March. And I usually used to come to Madhuban just in the month of February. Then I'd go back, and then Sudesh Pen would come for the month of March. This is how we worked it out at that time. because Daddy would be here in Madhuban for the stretch of the season. And I'd come back from Madhuban, and I get a phone call from my Lokik father, and at that point, he's very respectful and very cooperative, but he's not actually following Raj Yoga in any way. And in my early days in Gyan, I used to ask him to come to Madhuban, and he'd say to me, "I'll come in my own good time. I'll come in my own good time." And we'd talk about Gyan, and he had bhavna, love for God, but it was difficult to pin him down in terms of the concepts of Gyan. And then I'm getting this call, and he's saying, "I'm going to India." I say, "Good." He was constantly traveling. And then he said, "No, but I'm going to Mount Abu." I say, "Really? That's excellent." And then he says, "I want you to take me." And I said, "But I've just come back." And he said, "That's all right, you can come again." Mm-hmm. And so we come to India, and Baba's season is over by then. And he's just absorbing the love of the Dadis. And on a Lokik level, they know him. And some of them have met him in Lokik life also. So there was a very easy connection he had with all the Dadis, really just like a brother with all of them. And after a couple of days, he was here just a couple of days, then I'm coming down the mountain with him on our way to Ahmedabad, and he's going to go to Japan, and I'm coming back to London. And I'm having my first real deep conversation with him in the car after my surrender. So I'd surrendered 68 and this was 82. And in that time in between, we were poles apart. And so we'd never had a really intense heart-to-heart conversation. We used to before I came to Baba, but not after. And so now we're having this intense conversation. And I'm saying to him, you know, "What's your experience? And tell me, I'm curious." And for him, it was like a start of a Brahmin life in such an easy, natural way. And he's telling me of his plans and how he's going to continue with all the things of diet and so on and so on. And I say, "Well, you're on a trip to, on business trip to Japan. How are you going to manage with everything?" And he said, "No problem. You know how determined I can be." And it's true. Very determined. And I was really touched that Baba has moved something in him to make him, and it was not even meeting Avyakta Baba, but just Madhuban and that experience, and he's decided to transform his life completely, 180 degrees, just through coming to Madhuban. And when he comes back from his trip, he comes to the center, and I ask him how it's been, and he's been able to maintain everything. And so I was pleasantly surprised, although I know his determination, but, you know, it was challenging for him, but he'd maintained everything. And the other thing that deeply moved me was, at some point, I think maybe it was in the early 90s, I don't remember the year, but he was in intensive care in India, in Pune, and Daddy had sent me from London to see him. And when he came out of intensive, and it was a very challenging time for him, it was, you know, how trying to get a proper diagnosis is not so easy. And so different people were saying different things and so on. And until everything got settled, it was quite a bit of upheaval. But his faith in Baba through that period was incredible. And so I witnessed faith coming from somewhere, I don't know where, but of course he'd been exposed to Gyan for 22 years. So you absorb a lot, even if you don't take the course. And when Baba's tapes used to be playing in our home, then whoever's around listens to the tape. You didn't have little plugs in your ears in those days. The tape recorder would be on and everybody would be listening, my brother, myself, and he. And so he was absorbing a lot through all that time. But his faith in Baba and his love for the Dadis is really quite incredible. And Daddy always says that his bhavna is stronger than yours. So it's a good blessing he has.
From the 60s to the 80s, if I were to ask him, Murli Dada, what is the secret of your relationship with Sister Jayanti during that time? What do you think he would have said?
He'd say she was very disobedient and very stubborn.
Okay, let's take a look at what Dada said. I asked him the question and he sent me the reply, so we're going to take a look at it now.
When did you ask him?
Aha, that's the secret. So Suresh Bhai, could we have the video?
I had no idea that you'd made long-term preparations for this.
You have to turn around and watch it. Oh? What am I supposed to do, Dorothy? Lights out and video on. This is new for me, sorry. Okay, turn around. Here you go. Sound.
I need to tell you about Jayanti's bike story. Jayanti was only 4 years of age.
Lights out.
One day I took her to school on bicycle. She loved it. Next morning she said she wants to come again. I said, no, not every day. Once in a while, you can do it. She insisted that she wants to come every day on bicycle. In the end, we went on bicycle again. On our way to school, I told her she has to listen to the elders. And she really understood it and stood by it.
So she's still listening to elders?
In the late 60s. Jayanti was in India with her mother. He was disappointed of not getting medical college admission either in India or UK. Then she went to Miran Society Center to meet Dadi Janki. They discussed about Jayanti joining BK. Jayanti consulted me by letter. My suggestion was that each day life is very tough in India, for the center. Joining today and leaving it tomorrow will not look nice on our part. I asked her to rethink over the matter and decide. I suggested to her that if still you want to join, I will support you. But it has to be a lifetime commitment. And she accepted it, to think it over and come back. And I accepted it. Jayanti was very clear what she wanted and tried to achieve it. There has always been a trust between us, and that has been the foundation. Good wishes all of you, and goodbye.
So that was the secret revealed by Dada, which I found very striking actually, because I never knew how he thought about Sister Jayanti coming to Baba and surrendering at such a young age. But what struck me by what he narrated there was he always trusted you. There was a lot of trust and still is a lot of trust in the relationship. So even though Sister Jayanti said they were poles apart. Between the two poles were all these vibrations of trust and love, and he knew what she was doing. And of course, Dada, last December, he turned 90. So I sent him a little message saying that he's now heading and we'll celebrate his 100th birthday. So he also narrated a story. The first one, he talked about the ability that, you know, riding that bike, and he told you must listen to elders and it mustn't always be your way or the highway. And you've been very good at that, listening to elders. The second story he narrated, which we didn't show because of time, was that he took you to South Ridges once. And he said to Sister Jayanti, go into the store and choose whatever you want, and I'll get it for you. As many as you want, and however, how many, you know, whatever you want. And he said she went around and around and around and around and looked and looked and looked, and she said, I don't want anything. And he said that he knew she would do that. So what he did was he got her something anyway. So, and kept it at home as a surprise. And so when she went home, he showed her, and it was a red woolen suit. And he says as soon as she saw it, she loved it. And so this ability of yours, Sister Jayanti, what's the secret in growing up in a world of affluence in which you could have gotten whatever you want materially, but you chose a path that was contrary to that? Were you not never tempted? I mean, what is it that kept you with this ability to have this kind of disinterest and disdain from such a young age? And I knew, you told me how you used to like to dress a lot and, you know, do stuff like that. But this aspect, why I'm asking asking you the question at a personal level, because I think it has a bigger understanding here. When we come on our spiritual path, the one thing that scares people is this whole aspect of having to give up things, of having to do without, of having to leave your loved ones. And that's why I brought your parents in, because you never really, they didn't leave you, you didn't leave them. But what is the secret of living a path that is so integrated that it brings a lot of contentment without the fear of not being able to do these things?
I don't remember the story of Selfridges, but I do remember that red woolen suit. It looked very nice. And it's true that, you know, take me shopping and I come back empty-handed. Till now, I don't know what to get. You know, there's really nothing. I've got too much I need to give away. And I think that it's because the soul's always felt that I have everything I need. And it's not been an effort to get to that stage. You know, there are other things that I've had to make effort for. But to be disinterested in material possessions, that's been the easiest. And this is why it was really a blessing for me to adopt the white sari. It wasn't a sacrifice, it wasn't renunciation, it was just easy because I knew that it would make my life much simpler. You know, and today still sisters who travel with me who have to wear their colored clothes and they have to carry all the other stuff, and I just have to take a few saris and that's it. And so it simplified life a lot for me. And so I liked that. I didn't have to think. You could just pick up a sari and that's it. You don't have to worry about what did I wear last time I went to meet them, and, you know, none of that. So I like the simplicity of the life that Baba has given us. And it really frees up my mind for other more valuable, more important things. And I think that desires and acquisitions and accumulation, it's really occupying not just space in the cupboard, but it's occupying space in here. And I've been very concerned about that, that I want to keep this free. So that's the story there.
I also know that you were very protected, you know, growing up in the Yagya, as a Yagya Vata, the daughter of the Yagya. You actually had the privilege of being very protected, and you had people like Didi in your life, you had Daddy Kumarki in your life, you had Mama, you must have met Mama. Of course, you had Baba. I know Jagdish Pai was close to you. And so many, many more of the, as Daddy calls them, the ancestor souls. Each one of them must have left a secret with you. And so let's start with Didi. What was the secret that Didi left with you? Because many of you here may not have met Didi, but Didi was one of the foundational pillars of the Yajna, and she was, I call her, the one who was the main flame after Brahma Baba to hold this Yajna together. And so what is the secret that Didi left with you that informed your journey?
Very early on, when I'd be coming to India, and Daddy Janki was in London for 4 years, and she didn't leave the UK for that period of time. And that was a real sacrifice on Daddy's part, because she knew that if she stayed for a length of time, we'd get the whole visa story sorted out. And so she just continued. And then, according to drama, it was actually Murali Dada's advice that sorted it out with one phone call. And it was very simple, it was very easy. So during that time, I was coming to India generally twice a year even. And this was a special blessing from Baba, because from 1969, in June, when I went back to London, through to 72, 73, something like that, I wasn't able to come to India. And when I came to Madhuban, then meeting Baba in Baba's room. We used to have special meetings in Baba's room in those days sometimes. So meeting Baba in Baba's room, Baba gave me a very, very special blessing, which has been a very practical thing. And Baba said, "You'll come to Madhuban more often than even the teachers in India." And so it just became true that I was coming twice a year usually. And when I'd come, then Daddy Janki would give me messages for Didi. They used to communicate by letters, not so much by phone in those days. But Daddy would write, Didi would write. And then Daddy would give me points that I had to come and tell Didi about. And I would write them down. And I would come and Didi would give me an hour of her time. And I'd sit and share with her the things that Daddy had asked me to tell her, and get her responses. And before I'd leave to come back to London, Didi would sit with me, and again I'd be writing all those points. So it was very beautiful to be a messenger and to hear what Didi had to share. And one day she said to me, whoever becomes an instrument to give gyan is very much loved by the student who they're the instrument for. And generally it would happen that the student feels that this is the person who's given me the third eye, who's done so much for me, and they really love that instrument. And that's understandable. But if you accept that love and you take it, then it's going to become a trap for you. And it's a trap for the person who thinks you're the instrument, because then they're not appreciating Baba, they're more appreciating you. But it's a trap for you also. And I could see the wisdom that you were sharing, so my question to her was, well, how do I keep myself safe and not allow that to happen? And she said, make sure that every student doesn't stay just connected with you, but they get connected with others who are your seniors, so that then you're the instrument connecting them in a very practical way to those who are more advanced, more experienced than you. And so in London it was easy, because then I'd be connecting people with Daddy very, very quickly, and Daddy was available and she wanted to have that connection. But it was also a very clear thought that I would have. I want to connect the soul with Daddy Janki. And it's true that whatever you're giving an individual, when you connect them with somebody higher, then you're receiving a lot more. And so benefit for them, but also then protection for you. And so that advice from Didi was very, very precious. And she also said not only about the connection of souls in that way, but she also said that it's very easy at that moment to get the ego. Ah, you see, I'm a good instrument. You're using the word instrument, but it's still with ego. And she said that if you connect souls with higher souls, then that also will save you from your ego, because you'll know that just as whatever you've done, but there's an ocean that they can explore and take from. And so you won't have the ego that, yes, I am the instrument and I can give them everything.
And from Dadiji, the secret from her?
Dadiji's humility. I saw her in a situation in which, I think you were also present, it was a small group, and one very powerful individual started commenting, and the comments became a little bit aggressive, and the aggression was being directed at Dadiji, because what this individual was wanting was not what was happening in the yagya. And the individual was, it wasn't coming out at that moment in their words, but this was the background, because the discussion was a simple discussion, but the aggression that was coming was based on what I know, that Dadiji wasn't fulfilling the thought that this individual had. And the aggression was so strong that all of us in the room were feeling not very happy. We were very uncomfortable, but neither could we stop that person, nor could we say anything. It was not appropriate. The person finishes, and Daddy is chairing the meeting, and Daddy just nods her head as if she's accepting whatever was said, and she goes on to the next point, and then the next point starts. And if I had been in Daddy's situation, I would have asked somebody else to begin speaking to the next point. What Dadiji did is imprinted in my heart. She turned to the same individual, and here's somebody who's been berating her, and yet she's again handing a ready-made platform to that same individual. She didn't avoid it, and it would have been fine, appropriate to ask somebody else to speak to it. But she turned to that individual and said, "What do you think about this?" And I think it shook that individual. They were not expecting that Daddy would again give them a platform in that way. And it took away the heat of the situation completely, and the tension disappeared, and that person started speaking to that next point in a very normal tone of voice. And it was an amazing lesson, because it was a lesson of how if you react to somebody, even if you're right in your reaction and what they've said is completely wrong, but you're just going to add fuel to the fire, and the fire is going to be more difficult to put out. But A, her acceptance, and then B, actually opening the door for that individual. And it's like, you know, pulling the thorn out so that then there's no more pain there. And it was quite amazing to see that. Very, very beautiful. And so Dadiji's humility, but together with that, her dignity, her self-respect. Because if I don't have self-respect and I'm in that situation, I really get crushed. But she maintained her dignity, her self-respect, and she was able to handle it so beautifully.
As you speak, I feel that the Dadi and Didi, in the case of your examples you give, they were able to live their lives by these spiritual secrets. Do you feel that where we stand today, that those spiritual secrets that brought success in such a natural, easy way are being concealed and techniques are replacing them and skills?
If I read the Muralis that we are reading at the moment, the Sakar Muralis, as well as the Avyakt Revision Course Muralis, I see that everyone in the Brahmin family is being exposed to these secrets. You're calling them secrets, but in fact, those secrets are there for all of us to study and understand and practice. And so, yes, I understand what you're saying, that there's all sorts of presentations that now are being shared, both with the family as well as in terms of people out there. And it's the modern world, and it's time for that, and everything has its place, and I appreciate and value all of that. But yet, every morning, listen to Baba, and all the secrets are there within the Sakar Muralis. Today's Murali, each day's Murali, very, very beautiful. And especially since January, every single Sakar Murali, a few maybe have been technical in terms of, you know, the knowledge of the Gita sermonizer, or the cycle, or the tree. But mostly they haven't been filled with technical gyan in a sense, but they've been very practical things for us to practice. Soul consciousness, this lesson, basic lesson, and yet such a very important foundation that we need to keep going back to. And the things that Baba said today about the dharana we should have. So the secrets that we're talking about are actually very open secrets. So that the Dadis not just heard Baba, but took what Baba was sharing and made it their life. They practiced what Baba was saying. And for us, sometimes it stays on the level of intellectual appreciation. Oh, Baba said this, and this was so beautiful. It was really very, very lovely. But it stays there. Instead of thinking that it's for me and it's for my life, and from the moment that we start using it for our life, then those secrets are there revealed in our lives.
Yes, I was thinking more to the effect that, you know, if you want to know about the soul, you can Google it. And you can find out a lot about the soul. But if you want to know the secret of being soul conscious, you don't Google it.
No.
Right? So that's a distinction I'm making in terms of techniques and skills. You could learn it from others, but this thing about soul, the secret of being soul conscious, is something that's got to be applied based on, as you said, Baba's Muralis. Sister Janti, do you think you're successful? Would you say you're a successful person?
There's two different things, and one is the inner journey in which you know what it is you're dealing with, and I would say that I'm on the road to success rather than successful. I'm dealing with things, which is why when I share things in my classes, people come up to me and say, I didn't realize that you were going through the same things. But in fact, all of us on the same journey and the same milestones will come our way. So I'm on the journey. And then in terms of service, so much that's happened, you can't separate what's happened in terms of London, UK, or even generally the world without thinking of Dadi Janki and Baba, yes, of course. But the amazing service that Dadi has done And so sometimes I feel that I've just had the good fortune to be catching hold of her tail and enjoying her success.
So what is the secret of Dadi Janki's success?
The ability to connect with Baba, and through the connection with Baba, to know exactly what is needed at this moment, whether it's in terms of meeting an individual. And again, I've been a fly on the wall translating for Dadi for many, many years. A few of us have had that fortune of translating for Dadi, and what we learn from the translation is something that can never be taught just by books. And I've seen, whether it's a person, I remember one person saying to me, part of the family, nothing fantastic, nothing great, but Dadi spent about 45 minutes with them, and they needed it. And afterwards that person said to me, I could never have believed that Dadi would give me this space, this time. And Dadi knew that that's what that soul needed. And she just gave that. And of course today I think the world has changed and Dadi has 25,000 people to think about. But this was in the days in London. But still she was quite busy, and but Dadi knew what that individual wanted. And then you have people who the world would consider VIPs, and Dadi's meeting them. And Dadi's so natural with them that he's just calling them brother, my brother, or my sister, my sister. And Dadi's just connecting with Baba in silence, and she knows what it is they need. And I remember Robert Mueller, one of the first officials of the UN, who we met and was a very good friend, he's passed on now. He was Assistant Secretary General of the UN at that time. And he said to Dadi, whoever else comes to me wants something from me. But when you come to me, I take something from you. And whether it's Prince Charles she's meeting, whether it's a UN Assistant Secretary General she's meeting, she goes with the thought that Baba has something to give to them. She'll never go with the thought that, well, how can this soul be an instrument for service? No. She'll go to give to them as Baba's instrument. And that's a very, very important secret that I think it's worth keeping in mind when we're serving high-profile individuals. It's not what we want from them, but it's what Baba can give to them.
And would that be the same secret that would be applied to any form of service, whether it is to money, whether it is to relationships, whether it is to the center flourishing in many different ways? Because there seems to be a drive toward affluency and flourishing. But what is the secret to keep it on the straight and narrow, to keep it within the disciplines or the pure intention with which it must be used?
The secret behind the abundance that Dadi has generated wherever she goes, I think the secret there is generosity. You know, when there's abundance, it's easy to be generous. But I know Dadi when she had 2 saris, and yet her generosity of spirit was always there. Some of you have heard me share the story of being 8 years old and kids playing in the garden after our classes in the mornings, Baba's classes. And so this is in Pune in 1957. And so we'd be playing in the garden, and we'd have had our lesson and so on. And then sometimes it would become 12 o'clock, and she'd be concerned that we'd been there a couple of hours and we'd be hungry. And I don't think anybody ever said, I'm hungry, but she just thought. And she would take us into the garden. Wasn't the center's garden, it was a neighbor's garden, but she would take us into the little center and the little center would be just about the space of backstage, not even the stage. So it was very little. And she would feed us. And it would be very simple, a bit of chapati, a bit of vegetables. But the secret is that that was her lunch. And she didn't have anything more that she was going to cook afterwards. That was it. What she had was there, and she shared it. And she wouldn't have lunch that day. It's basic, simple. And so her generosity of spirit, right from that time on, you came to Baba when we were still in Tennyson Road. We hadn't even yet moved to Baba Bhavan. And it was very simple. But yet she wanted Auntie and you and everyone to come and share everything that was there in Baba's house. And so her generosity has created abundance. And so if there's a secret how to have abundance, just simply be Baba's instrument to share. What I have isn't for me, but it's to give happiness to others. Mm-hmm. And that will bring whatever resources are needed.
I have two other questions, and they're going to be very brief. One is, when I came, and much into many, many years after I became a Brahmin, everybody wanted to be like Sister Jayanti. Sister Jayanti was like, I don't know what, the Princess Diana of the VK world. Everybody wanted to be like Sister Jayanti. And I sometimes wonder, looking back, was that a pressure for you? Because I remember that one of the things I admire most about you is that I never ever picked up you being jealous of someone else. And I gave that as my gift to you for your 60th birthday, that the Sister Jayanti I knew, I've never known her to be jealous. How did you cope with everybody wanting to be like Sister Jayanti?
I don't think it impacts me and my consciousness in any way, actually. Mm-hmm. Because what I'm doing is thinking about what is it that Baba expects from me. And that's a big enough job for me to fulfill without thinking of anything else. So it's not been any pressure on me in that sense. One of the things that's been pressure is trying to cope with a daily timetable that is so much packed in. That's been the pressure, but not other people saying
but
things.
But surely others were jealous of you. How did you deal with that?
I asked Daddy, and Daddy's answer was very interesting. She said that if there's real humility, then nobody can be jealous of you. But if there's even a little bit of ego, then they're picking up on that, and that's what brings the jealousy. And so when she explained that to me many, many years ago, it was again a very big lesson, just to go deeper inside and appreciate my fortune, but not have ego of my fortune, because my fortune's been huge. And why I've never been jealous of anyone is because I've never had to be jealous. Baba's given me everything without waiting for anything. So opportunities just keep coming, the doors just keep opening. And I'm grateful to Baba, but together with that, the lesson of humility again has been underlined for me.
I've saved the best for last, and I've given her the smallest amount of time to answer it in. What is the call of the time for us? What is time signaling us?
I'm seeing Avyakta Baba's role changing, and it's not a secret, everybody can see that. But I see that the signal from Avyakta Baba Dada is really, you see, when I hear the Muralis now, and you can compress what Baba's saying just in a very short paragraph almost. But the detail of everything Baba is saying, Baba's told us already. For example, when Baba reminded us very strongly many, many times on the 18th of January, follow the Father, follow the Father. Baba doesn't need to give us detail anymore. Baba's given us all the detail. Yesterday when I was hearing the Murli, and it was an interesting contrast, the holy Murli the night before and Baba's love being shared, but then yesterday's Murli and the depth and the detail of the Murli. Big contrast. And I thought to myself, well, Baba's told us. We're listening to Murlis from 77, but right from 1969, the detail of all the things Baba's explained. I mean, every virtue, every power, every situation, every color of Maya. Is there anything Baba hasn't explained? And so Baba doesn't need to get into detail anymore. He's told us. And if we haven't listened and if we haven't practiced, well, that's it. You know, each one's had that opportunity. But what Baba wants us to do now is really move beyond just listening and practice and experience. What Baba wants us to do through that silence. And so the whole season, every time it's been different. How is Baba going to be this time? And you can't predict. But definitely the signal for me has been, it's really, we've had not just the 18 chapters of the Gita in the Sakar Murlis. When Baba became Avyakt, Baba told us that. 21st January 1969, Baba said, you've had the 18 chapters of the Gita. And now, Baba's going to come to be with you, to support you, to help you, entertain you. Baba's done all of that. We've had so much entertainment from Baba. And so what now? Surely, Baba's done everything that Baba can. And now Baba's, I think, wanting us to be pulled into silence. I think it was last season, Baba asked us the question, do you give time for Mansa Seva? And Baba insisted, even if you haven't done anything up until now, at least give 5 minutes of your time every day to Mansa Seva. And I have to admit, I don't do that every day. Sometimes I remember, sometimes I don't. And so all the things Baba's told us, when we're going to do them, but especially this thing about Mansa Seva, I think that's the call of the time. And it was a very interesting question that was asked by somebody who's a guest who had come to Call of Time maybe about 8 years ago. We'd taken up the subject about Mansa Seva, and the guests wanted to keep this term Mansa Seva. They didn't want the English translation, because the Mansa Seva idea puts across two things, that it's service of the mind, serving my mind, and then service through the mind. And a guest had asked Daddy the question, what are the qualifications of a mind that's able to serve? Because in order to do any task, you need to be qualified. And so if I'm going to use my mind to be able to serve, what qualifications do I need to have? And I'm sure you remember the scene also. And I think that's the lesson we're still learning. What is it to make my mind qualified to be able to use my mind to serve? That really is the call of the time.
Thank you, Sister Jainti. It was wonderful. And I had cued her that I would ask her a few other questions. And then the reaction I got, they were very heavy. So I decided to just talk to her about her personal life. And so she could reveal to us the secrets of how, and I think she did a lot of that, of how she was able to sustain a path that is so straight and so narrow and requires so much of attention with such dignity and such grace. And I, on behalf of all of you, would like to thank you for really being so candid on some of the answers and so honest. And I was very privileged to bring in Dada, Murli Dada, to be part of this.
Well, I think you did a lot of preparation. I had no idea. So thank you.
Thank you both.